from the first gospel. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Today we continue with the summer movie sermon series with the Milagro Beanfield War, which was kind of a cult hit, not very widely known, but has a great story and some interesting themes and messages for us to consider today. The first thing that you need to know is that Milagro is dying. The town name means miracle, but miracles are hard to come by in this northern New Mexico village. It's a town where the mayor says, if we don't know it already, chances are we aren't interested in learning it. And Ruby Archuleta, who is the local mechanic, talks of a time in the past when our children stayed home and raised their children in Milagro. But now we could become a town of old men and old women. It's a town under siege. Not literally, not threatened by war or violence. And the biggest danger is not even the proposed recreation area development going on nearby that will potentially destroy the land's natural beauty in order to replace it with a resort and golf course that will drive up taxes and drive out the families who have lived there for 300 years. That is a major danger to the town, but even more suffocating, it seems, is the community's lack of will to live as a community. But one morning, Amarante Cordova, the town's oldest resident, wakes to find an angel at his water pump. And though at first Amarante tells him, I'm not ready for you, thinking that it's the angel of death, the angel tells him, I see windmills on your horizon. And so we know that this will be a story, something like Don Quixote, of a man who wants to pursue a seemingly impossible dream. Now this angel is called Coyote Angel. And some of you may already know that the coyote in Native American and Southwestern folklore is a trickster figure, someone who is a creative force, but also disruptive. And as the angel of death, Amarante refuses to go with him. Though he is in his 80s at least, Amarante is not ready to die, and he's not ready to let his town die either. And so later on that same day, when Amarante sees the angel at the water pump, a young man named Joe or Jose Mondragon begins irrigating his father's long abandoned bean field. In spite of the water rights laws that make it illegal for him to do so, because the water rights, the usage of the water, is only allowed by Lad Divine, who is the land developer and property owner. The transgression begins unintentionally. Joe gets mad when he sees the sign that says no community water use allowed, and he just kicks the sign and goes on walking. But in kicking the sign, he accidentally opens the sluice that lets water flow down the hillside from the rushing stream into the dry bean field. And though Joe knows that he's not supposed to let the water run out that way, he decides not to close it right away, but to just sleep on it first. And pretty soon, word gets out that young Joe Mondragon is defying the law and the land developer in order to plant pinto beans. To the locals, this is a curiosity, a risky enterprise, not necessarily their necks at stake, so they come out by the dozen to watch Joe work in the field. To the developer, Lat Devine, and the power brokers with whom he works, this is a thorny challenge. If they arrest Joe, they could draw unwanted attention to the fact that this development could mean the death of Milagro and other small traditional towns like it. But they can't just let him go on taking their water. So they contact the state engineer's office and bring in a detective from the capital, played by Christopher Walken, whose job it is to stop Joe without arresting him. And to Ruby Archuleta, the local mechanic, this is an opportunity to rally the town, to gather the people and open their eyes to the encroaching danger that she feels she alone can see, to organize a resistance movement to protect Milagro and its way of life. And so she writes an article for the local paper, and she enlists the help of the publisher, who is a semi-retired lawyer and activist named Charlie Bloom, to help educate the people about what this recreation area development and Joe's small bean field could mean. Well, the people prove kind of difficult to organize. They're inclined to argue and fight, not to form any kind of organized protest movement. But small acts of resistance and disturbance keep popping up. When one of Devine's men buys all the copies of the local paper to try to prevent the community from reading the article that Ruby and Charlie have put together, and to prevent them from learning about the town meeting that they have planned, the Coyote Angel creates a wind that whips all the pages of all the newspapers into the air so that they're floating across the sky like a flock of birds, gradually drifting down into the hands of all the townspeople. Crosses with an inscription on them calling the developer a vulture keep being planted on his property. And a sign that proclaims the coming recreation area is burned down. Meanwhile, the bean plants keep growing, and the bulldozers keep tearing out the trees to make way for the resort. Well, the tension escalates, and one or two at a time, the townspeople come into the general store to buy bullets for their mostly ancient pistols and rifles. When one of Devine's men drives a bulldozer into Joe's bean field, old Amarante shoots at him with impressive accuracy. And after chasing the man off, Amarante climbs into the bulldozer himself and drives it over the edge of a high canyon wall, jumping out at the last possible moment. And then, in a terrible sequence of misunderstanding and obscured vision, Joe shoots Amarante's pet pig, Lupita, and then shoots the old man himself. It is an accident and self-defense at that, but given the emotional climate, Joe's friends know that he will not be given a fair trial. He will not be seen as innocent until proven guilty, if he is found. And so they urge him to run, and he takes off for the forested canyons to lay low for a while and to see how things play out. And Joe's wife, Nancy, hearing of all that has happened, asks of Ruby, "Why is it every time we're mad at one of them, we end up hurting one of us?" Well, I can't go into all the details of the movie, but there is a happy ending for Milagro, for Joe, for Amarante, and even for Lupita the pig. At the last minute, the governor calls off the detective who is ready to arrest Joe. The townspeople stand down from their war that they were ready to fight. Amarante recovers, and the town celebrates the harvest with music and dancing in the bean field. Now, in some ways, the Milagro Beanfield War has a similar plot structure to Footloose, which I preached on last month. There's a small town that is kind of stuck and in need of new life. And the actions of one individual gradually make possible the healing and resurrection of the whole community. But where Footloose takes a very positive view of the changes that the modern world brings to small traditional towns, Milagro is shown to be right in resisting the land development plans. And where Footloose is largely about allowing young people the freedom to make their own choices and to express themselves, the Milagro Beanfield War is more interested in reviving traditional culture and values and maintaining connections between older and younger generations. The spirituality of Milagro is quite different as well. There is a character named Herbie Platt, who is a young sociology student from NYU who comes to the town to stay and to do research on indigenous cultures. He talks at different times with Joe and with Amarante about the syncretism or mixing of Catholic Christianity and the traditional spiritual beliefs of indigenous cultures. Herbie insists that academically, the people are still worshiping pagan idols that have simply been renamed as Christian saints. Joe replies that the people there are Catholics and they worship God. And Amarante tries to explain to Herbie how the saints and angels help them. That St. Jude, the patron saint of lost causes, has brought him safely through several operations. Herbie doesn't quite get it, and so Amarante explains how to light candles for the saint, to set out tamales and salsa and maybe a little beer, to talk to the saint and ask for help. Amarante sighs that people have forgotten how to talk to saints and angels. And Herbie asks, "Well, what do you mean? You actually talk to the angels?" And the old man replies, "Those are the only ones around got time to spare." The coyote angel, as Amarante says, doesn't seem much like an angel to our traditional ways of thinking about angels. He swears, he offers wisecrack remarks. He doesn't often intervene in what is happening. Occasionally, he offers advice. Only Amarante can see him. Though at times the other townspeople can hear the strains of the angel's concertina. There's no priest shown in the movie for this town, though the people have their town meeting in an old colonial-style mission church. God does not seem to be an immediate reality for any of the characters except for Amarante, who gives thanks to God each morning that he has been granted another day of life. His is an earthy spirituality, one that is rooted in the tangible realities of daily life, in the dirt and sweat of the bean field, in the centuries of family relationships that make up the town. The spirituality is only valuable insofar as it gives people strength to face their daily work and gives them hope and purpose to know what to stand up for and how to be a community. Milagro starts out as a town that is dying, a community that has lost its sense of hope and purpose, a village that doesn't know how to reclaim its interconnectedness with the land, interconnectedness among the neighbors, and connectedness with both the past and the future. And through one small act of defiance and stubbornness, without any grand sense of purpose or political protest, Joe Mondragon sets in motion a series of events that highlight the differences between the Spanish and Indian-influenced culture of Milagro on the one hand and the Anglo orientation towards progress, development, and materialism on the other. I feel that I have to put in a small caveat here. I don't believe that land development is always bad. My grandfather spent much of his working life in real estate development. But in any endeavor, there can be a danger when we pursue a single-minded, narrow vision of what is best, without regard for all the other factors that can provide balance and harmony. And in one of the first scenes in the movie, the mayor of Milagro tells a gathering of friends of Divine, the developer, that the people in the town are 100% behind this plan to put in a fancy recreation area with ski slopes, cabins, and a golf course. It doesn't take long for the audience to discover that this is somewhere between an exaggeration and a bald-faced lie. There are a few people who support the plan in the town because they've been promised work on the development with higher pay than they are used to. There are one or two, mainly Ruby, who are adamantly opposed, who foresee the death of the town in the higher taxes that will come, and who are just waiting for the opportunity to bring others around to their point of view. But the vast majority of the village seems to be taking a wait-and-see approach. It seems to be based on cynicism, born of past betrayals and defeat, and a sense of powerlessness to make a difference in how history will unfold. But it turns out they're not powerless. Even in their squabbling and disorganized resistance, the people of Milagro find a way to stand up for justice, for Joe, and for their town, to protest the heavy-handed ways of the powerful, and to promote their own values and their own definition of what makes a community rich. They figure out how to let their light shine, to rekindle the flame of hope, joy, and purpose, of relationship and care and unity, and to lift the bushel basket of despair so that all the world can see their light shine. When Ruby hears the news about Joe irrigating his father's bean field and goes to see it for herself, she proclaims, "I knew Joe Mondragon couldn't go through his entire life without attempting at least one great thing." May each of us find at least one great thing to attempt in our lives, to let our saltiness burst through and our light shine before others, to give God the glory for the hope and joy and purpose that we find by God's grace through Jesus Christ. Amen.